League. Shiny Goons.
Touch them all, Joe.
Yeah! Oh, it's only game.
Hello and welcome everyone to the show that gets people talking about something else. This is Big Shiny Goons and it is episode 22. I'm your host Thomas and with me today is the host of Southpaw Sports of Means TV and generally your favorite American leftist sports fan, Adam Villman is here. Adam, how's it going, man?
It's going great. I feel like I should say that like Southpaws is not coming back, at least in like its old form. I don't know where Nathan and Maurice are still trying to do stuff. So we can use this opportunity so everyone can know what happened. I just quit the show because I was way too busy and it was really brutal doing a week to week, like daily show or not daily, but weekly show where I was just researching all that stuff. And it was really easy to do during the pandemic once I could go outside, which I guess might not be the case anymore soon. It became very difficult to like live my life. So that's all that happened. It wasn't anything serious, but yes, I did. I guess I still can hold the title because no one else is hosting the show at this point.
There you go.
So.
Oh man. Yeah. Like this is literally going to be, it's the first recording, but it might be later down the road of releasing. Cause I'm doing a bunch of pre-record. I'm already mentioned screwing it up off the top of, mentioning that this is all pre-recorded, but
you're ruining the kayfabe.
I know, exactly. Right. I'm not doing any time dating or carbon dating or anything, but I took a break from this show after like 21 episodes in, just because like the weekly, even like just spending an hour talking to people that like my friends and just like just talking to people for an hour and not like doing a ton of research, but just like listening to an album a week was still, I felt like, I don't know, you got to do stuff. Like, again, like it was easy during when we were all inside and I was working from home, but now I'm like commuting back and forth. It takes a toll on you to like set aside a whole night to do something or whatever.
Oh yeah. Yeah. We were joking with, I was joking with Brian, who hosts Street Fight. And I'm like, you host literally the only show that would be possible for like a regular human being to do weekly because you can just decide that your show is a different show every week, which would have made things like a lot easier. Like, not to say that they don't work very hard. They're like the hardest working podcasters I've ever seen in my life. But like, I can only imagine like what things would be like if I didn't have to constantly talk about the same thing. That's really what like ends up getting on you. It's just very difficult. I admire Sam Sachs at Means TV, who does the Means Morning News every Sunday. That man edits that show like all night. So hats off to people who can pull it off. But I have far too much ADD to be doing that every week.
Well, especially it's such like a, not a narrow thing, but like a very like, okay, here's what's in the news for sports. And then you're trying to come up with a different angle with it, right? Like, you're trying to approach it from everything, and like it kind of gets tiring. Be like, oh yeah, sports is terrible. Like the union that they don't have, that the player union sucks ass. Like it's kind of the same old, right?
Like it got really difficult. Because like to be completely honest, really what happened by the time I was ready to quit was it was just like, I didn't even really like watching sports at that point. I probably people probably know me if you follow the show as like a big White Sox fan. And I've probably watched like 5 games tops of like, they're like finally good season. Cause like, I'm just so jaded on professional sports. It just became like very difficult, which is why by the end, we were really trying to like dig into stuff like surfing and skateboarding and like other kind of like off the beaten path sports that really weren't just kind of like this like highly commercialized consumer product like based on a lot of exploitation and misery. I still love, I play hockey every week. Like that was the show's gift to me, is that it told me we had an episode with Dr. Nathan Coleman Lamb back when we were just a podcast, and he was like, kind of like, you know, you should challenge yourself to like be more active in like the things you consume, like don't passively consume this stuff. And the second he told me that, he fucking ruined sports for me. So shout out to Dr. Nathan. I now actively live my life as opposed to looking for meaning and substance in the activities of others. So
there you go. That's yeah, all you can ask for.
Yeah, right. I mean, guess it was a lot easier when I could just watch the fucking White Sox.
now it's all ruined for me. New NHL season starting, and I'm just like gonna tune out. But
oh, dude, I got, speaking of that, I got rid of my I was a Hurricane season ticket holder. Mm-hmm. Got rid of my tickets because of Tony D'Angelo. Like, just literally, I have nothing left. It is professional sports. I still watch the WNBA a little bit because, but even the WNBA is getting to the point that it's just like, well, it's this woke product for me to like consume and feel good about myself. I mean, the basketball, I really enjoy the game. I'm a bigger college basketball fan, not for the normal reasons, not for racist reasons. I don't think they play the game the right way or better, or they don't dunk as much, but I just like the coaching, the coaching strategy, because there's more uniformity to the size of the players basically. And so it's kind of more variety in play style. So I also, it's on during the summer. Like if you love basketball, you are truly like kind of a dickhead in my opinion, if you don't watch the WNBA, because it like totally goes out of its way for you to watch it. And if you're a big hoops fan, I mean, you have no excuse in my opinion. You're not that big of a hoops fan if you don't watch it.
Yeah. Like, would you rather watch the WNBA or like, even when summer league's on, like some like guy that's a future electrician in like Georgia, that's like,
yeah, I can't imagine thinking that summer league is more entertaining than the WNBA. Yeah, like, exactly. Like, yeah, I mean, the WNBA is to the point that the league is so small that they are like cutting like first round draft pick, like upper first round draft picks, like immediately, because it's just so full. Like the talent level is so high. Hoping they maybe get some expansion. I know they've been talking about it. So the league is definitely growing. It's very, I love WNBA. It's great.
Yeah. Yeah. Even though like, I know, I forget who I was listening to recently. It might've been, Abdul Malik from, he does the Off the Court podcast.
Yeah. I've done that show with him. Oh, yeah, he's great. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think I was listening to him talk about the WNBA where it's like, it's kind of built to fail. Like it's a product that's more so like, it was an extension of the NBA, kind of like a formality that they had to do, almost like they were forced into it, and they don't like do all the extra like incentivizing that you actually can provide the league, like if you actually cared about it and wanted to like get more eyes on it, compared to just like here's $1 million per team kind of thing, like just take your money and
it does. I'm not a really old fan, and I'm sure there's people who I know for a fact, there's people who have watched WNBA since like 1996, I think seven when it started, that are extremely passionate and could go into the history of it for you. But it did always feel like, yes, that for a long time, the WNBA was kind of like a tax write-off for the WNBA or for the NBA. And I don't know, you know, as for me, at least, what really was a big thing was that the players kind of really took initiative, like the NBA players took initiative to kind of like shine light on WNBA, because the league wasn't doing it. And then the league kind of felt like, oh fuck, like the players are kind of calling us out. And, you know, I mean, in the NBA, the players have like a little bit more bargaining power. And so, you know, I think, guys like Bradley Beal, are huge. Bradley Beal actually like used to go to WNBA games when he was a kid and stuff with his mom. Wow. So he's been a huge passionate supporter. So yeah, I mean, I hate to say that it was like men who got me into it, but you know, I mean, I'm not gonna lie to you here, but I think it was big. It was big for giving it kind of like a more mainstream and putting the WA or the NBA kind of like on blast a bit for kind of like letting it get to start lacking, like, yeah, so
yeah, like even it's not to the same extent with hockey, just because they're not connected and in the same way like the NWHL, but like seeing players in like their post-game interview, as a lot of Sabres players were wearing like Buffalo Buttes hats and stuff, just like little things like that just like go such a long way. And it's not so like outspoken as maybe a player actually like attending a game or talking about it, but just like a show of like recognition that we're kind of paying attention kind of thing. Like I do, it's wishy-washy. Like I'm not the biggest proponent or expert on women's hockey and their goings on. Like I had friends that worked with the CWHL before it folded, and that whole like kind of wishy-washy kind of, you're not really sure of how to, I don't want to speak on anything that I don't know. Like, and I'm just guessing really. So it's, but it is like, it's that signal kind of that like, oh, we're paying attention to this like side of the sport. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and you're kind of hinting at, there is kind of a dangerous side of all this, and it does make the product kind of like, I saw someone complaining about specifically not the NWHL, the other one, that doesn't really have the a league,
the PWPHA.
They were kind of complaining that like literally every tournament has to be like the Women's Hope March on the ice and like shit like that, because there's like kind of this like kind of like perverse ideology that like women's sports are like inherently good. And it speaks to this thing that like sports are inherently good, because that is definitely something people believe. They think that there's some sort of inherent morality to sport and the act of playing sport. And I think that, yes, it's a human thing, for sure, like for us to play sports. Is it a moral thing to like watch games on TV? Absolutely not. Like, like that's just, it's just like this extension, this weird extension of like consumerist liberalism when it comes to like a lot of the I mean, a lot of people want to support it because, you know, it's like it is very fledgling and people like to watch it, and so they feel protective of it, which is a different impulse to me than being like, oh, like I need to watch. Like on the show, we always kind of like, for a bit I kind of felt like it was like, oh well, I have to watch this or else like I'm not a good leftist sports fan. And that's not to say that you shouldn't, like you should watch it, but for good reasons. Don't feel like it makes you a better person. You're not a better person because you watched it at the WNBA.
Yeah. Yeah. Like it's totally, it could get into that weird, like performative kind of thing. Be like, take a snap of your picture or like tweet about it or like, like screenshot you watching or something.
At the
like
end of the day, all you're doing, all that kind of stuff is really doing at the end of the day, when you really boil it down to one thing, is you're making money for a giant multinational corporation for free. So like, yes, if there was like, if the WNBA existed in a vacuum and was like, oh, like we've created a place for like women to showcase their skills and like, and be compensated fairly and for people to enjoy that, I think that that's kind of like, I guess, like at least like an ideal that I support. But yeah, the WNBA itself, like who gives a fuck? Like it, like you said, it's owned by the NBA. I don't give a shit about making the NBA more money than it already does. Like, fuck them.
Yeah. Like, and, like you already, and like, as great as like, I love watching like certain players play. But it's just like, at the end of the day, they're making like shit money compared to everyone else. So it's like, it's really hard to really enjoy this product when you know, deep down, it's like these players are making nothing. Like they're making like just like a week's worth of some NBA players. Like it's nothing like to scale. Like I love to support, but it's like, it's not the same. Like, what does my support mean to getting these players more like represented or more attention? Like every bit counts, but it's still like to a point, right? Like it's, it's a little hard, but
Yeah, it's definitely, it's a, you know, I mean, just enjoy it. That's what you can do. Like, there's just no, you know, and obviously support in that's, we get back to like participating in these spaces. Like, I think there's a big difference between being like, oh, like, I feel like I have to watch WNBA to be moral, and to be like, I make women feel safe in sports spaces, you know, or non-binary femmes, stuff like, you know, I mean, people just generally marginalized from the culture of sport, the greater culture. And I mean, a lot of people conflate professional sports as sport, like at like professional baseball is baseball to people. And it's like, no, there's like, that's just a little bit of baseball. Like there's so much to it. And like, that's what we need to transform and feel like because that's just part of the greater project of like not being a dick anymore, like, you know,
yeah,
that we all should be embarking on.
Like, it's so wild. Like, I've talked about this before a little bit and like with some other close friends and stuff, but like so I grew up like around just a bunch of skateboard kids, mm-hmm. and just like in that kind of community. I didn't skate just because like I fucking couldn't, but like I just hung around and just like watched videos and shit. Mm-hmm. But then like, so coming from that angle and that kind of like washed away, and then I recently, probably within the last year, like really returned to it, like getting back into it, keeping up with the community, watching videos, seeing what these new companies are, kind of what they're mm-hmm. doing. And they, I feel like if you pay attention to like how they view their like skateboarding in general, it feels like such a refreshing thing when you come mm-hmm. back to like sports. Like, it again, like they don't even say skateboarding is a sport. It's more of like an art form. It's more of just like an activity that you could do. And they're saying more of like skateboarding in general, like you could watch videos, but then a lot of people that enjoy it also do that activity. And of course that still happens in sports. Like, you still have your beer leagues players, but it's a lot of like, what is good for the sport? What is good for this? And then also like coming at it at a different point of view of just like a more positive point of view also, I feel like, mm-hmm. like just enjoying different skaters, different players for what they can provide, and not saying this guy's better than this guy or this girl's better than this girl kind of thing. Just like this general, just feeling good about where you are, right?
yeah, that's exactly, like it should be so much more like professional sport. I mean, I kind of, what I guess set me on this path of being so passionate about analyzing sport was definitely getting into pickup basketball with Nathan, my co-host. You know, he was really into it, and we were living together, and he just starts, you know, we start going to the court all the time, and it's just like so pure. It's like a community thing. It's like kind of an unspoken language of interaction. Mm-hmm. There's like, I mean, it's like, I like always joked, I never did it on the show, but like, I have like a theory of the radical, like anarchist politics of like pick up basketball. Like, it's just like self-governance. Like, you know, I mean, it's like, it is a very radical act, I think, to play pick up basketball in a way that a lot of people do. That it's just like, we have a framework of rules that kind of everybody agrees to, and sometimes they argue over that a little bit, but there's like generally enough ways to like resolve all the conflict and facilitate like people having a good time, and that everybody just does it because it's like, well, this is like good for all of us to just like to do things a certain way, you know, to have these rules, and you know, people don't really get that upset. So, and you know, we all have a great time. And so, I totally have. If you're into sport, you should be trying to at least like get out there, find something that you can participate, you know, in a community about, you know, more than just watching people play it on TV is kind of what I always try to challenge people. Not to say you can't, like I don't really much, but you know, I'm not judging you. I don't care if you watch it. Like, it is cool. Like, but yeah.
Like, even if it's so much as like being able to like make friends out of it. Like, a lot of mm-hmm. friends are just like out of watching these professionals play, you're like able to meet like new people and stuff, and like that mm-hmm. kind of external community with it that you kind of can benefit from. Like, not so much make it about your like watching experience, you're tweeting about this like 3 hours a night like kind of game, and then just like not doing anything with it, or not really focusing on this one player's whatever. And then it's just like, I feel like just the external kind of thing of it, and maybe that's what this whole show maybe is about, and like the connection with like people that are interested in sports are interested in other things too, kind of thing. But
You get really pigeonholed if you are into sport, especially like online. I mean, obviously we have all the sports communists. I know hockey Twitter has a bunch of them, and they have the Tumblr kids. But in baseball too. But yeah, I mean, you really do. That was always what our show was supposed to be about, is like being like kind of trying to meet those people and head on, that kind of, you know, I guess I don't want to be too disparaging, but you know, the sports ball people, and kind of meet them And it's similar to problems, you know, when I studied sports history in school, just sports academia in general. It's like people just, for some reason, there's this giant gaping hole. And like most people who analyze society or like have some stake in identifying things in society, that they're just like, oh, sports are not worth looking at. It was like, I mean, it's like, even just on his face, like think how much fucking money people spend like in tax dollars, like on these fucking stadiums, like writing off all these corporate, all these corporate donations and stuff like that. And it's just like, why would you just be like, oh, like that's something not worth of my time at all, because like someone was mean to me that played sports. So like, it's just not worth it to me. It's just like, it's a very strange dichotomy of people just like being like, oh yeah, I like, I'm really in touch with the world, but I just ignore this giant part of it, like for no reason. So, and I totally get it. I mean, yeah, like I said, I mean, I don't really watch much sports anymore, and I totally get not wanting to be around a lot of people who like sports, but you know, that whole like, oh, sports is soft fascism shit is just like such a lazy, boring analysis. And you can do better if like, if you don't, I don't know if your show is like geared totally towards sports people. So I don't know how many people I'm advocating towards.
It's pretty much.
Yeah. Okay. So when people tell you that, you tell them this, like,
it, yeah. Like, do you ever get any pushback from people that are like more, I guess, pay attention to like Means TV for the, obviously the political and left and kind of leftist shows, and just like, oh, these are the sports guys, whatever kind of thing?
No, honestly, we didn't. We never did. People saying like, I can't believe you're talking about sports. Like we generally had a pretty great, we weren't the most popular show for sure. And we went into it knowing that we wouldn't be, because it's just like, not like we're saying right now, it's just not a popular thing to think about on the left, especially. But yeah, like the people who were into it, we really energized, I think, a lot of people that like, it was either something they had given up on, or, you know, they didn't feel very, you know, positive about, like, which like I'm saying, I totally get, like, you know, as someone who is bisexual, like, I totally get like shit like that. Like, I know plenty of people I've met through the show quit sports because of homophobia or sexism or whatever, you know. But it did seem like we kind of like woke up a couple people that were like, I should give this another shot. There's other ways to engage with it, you know, like I can come back. And that's what we were all about, was like trying to create that positive space, like I was saying, for people to like, because sports are fucking fun. Like, it's fucking fun as shit to play sports. I love playing sports, like and interacting with sports and going and watching shit like the World Cup, or, you know, going and hanging out at the bar and watching a baseball game in the afternoon. Like, that stuff's all great, and it sucks that like it's such a deeply like the mainstream portrayal or you know, like the way that you can engage with it is just so fucking reactionary. Like, it just sucks, man.
Yeah, and that's like, that's from the top down too, of just like people see on TV, what people read. It's all just like the way that it's covered is just terrible. It's not like any nuance to it, but it's also like everything's like that. Like, even like you go, like if you're really deep into like film critics or whatever, it's just like takes or like music or anything. Like, it's all, maybe it's just like a grander sense of culture. But
I mean, I definitely, yeah, I agree that like that the mainstream culture is deeply reactionary in general, but sports in especially the United States are so unbelievably like backwards from where we are. Like, I mean, there's like not even really openly gay players in the league,
right?
Like, I mean, like you're saying, the women's leagues are like considered a joke to many hardcore or regular, I guess, mainstream sports fans. Like, I mean, it's just like so, like, things that are just like completely unacceptable in the regular world are just like the norm in sports. Mm-hmm. I mean, so like, I mean, just people like making you do the stand for the anthem and shit like that. Yeah. Like, I mean, it's just like, it is outrageous that it's just like so backwards, and it definitely sucks. I mean, I totally get not wanting to watch professional sports because of it.
Anyways, speaking of not watching professional sports, let's move on to our first
segment
of the show. So Adam, could I please just tell the audience quickly, anything you're checking out recently? Is it an album, like a single that's come out? just anything that's come out recently.
Yeah, so I guess like what I've been listening to a lot, so after the, during the pandemic, I got into playing music again as part of my greater mission of not of participating in all of the things that I enjoy, that I now do. And I got really into like folk music and blues music and stuff. So I've been playing a lot of harmonica, and oh, nice. As such, I've been really into Paul Butterfield's live stuff. I've been trying to glean a bunch of Paul Butterfield blues band and his solo projects on YouTube. I found some stuff like of him playing with Jimi Hendrix. But yeah, I've really gotten into just trying, like I never was a big YouTube guy. And when I got into like folk music, bluegrass, all that stuff, I realized that's where all like the good content is, because it's a spontaneous music form generally. It's like people conversing with other players, and so I've been, that's what I've been digging into mostly these days is Paul shredding mm-hmm. on his harmonica.
That's awesome.
Is it, you like, may know Paul Butterfield from, he played in The Last Waltz, like that band, the band's concert. Yeah. If you,
oh, that's awesome.
It's just most people kind of know him from, they did play at Woodstock, but he's not in the movie, so people don't know him from that. So
is the stuff you're checking on YouTube, like live performances, like professionally recorded live performances, or more?
Some of them are board mixes. So I've been kind of getting into bootlegging in general, because I'm also a Dave Matthews Band fan, a huge Dave fan. I saw Dave about a month ago. I went to two nights, fucking awesome. I listened to lots of Dave tapes. It's some of it's board mixes. I mean, because he was playing pretty long time ago, so the recording technology was obviously like worse, more expensive, larger, more cumbersome to use. So there's some, yeah, people like transferring reel to reel tape that they've made off of tape recorders, stuff like that. Like, so yeah, a lot of it is very difficult to listen to, and I kind of just skip it. Like you got to find the stuff, and there's not a whole, he doesn't have a whole lot, unfortunately, recorded live that I can find at least. But yeah, you know, some of it is, I mean, there's obviously some stuff like they have a couple live albums that are great. He did, they do this song called East West. That's like this epic, like 60s Haight Ashbury era stuff. Like, cause he moved out to San Francisco after his first album. He lived in Chicago. He played with like Muddy Waters and those guys in Chicago. And so, but they do, it's like got like kind of like the, you know, like the Eastern vibes, like the sitar kind of scales. And they would do apparently like entire hour long jams of it and stuff. So I've heard a couple of those. They're pretty sweet. There is an album version. It's definitely pretty cool. Like I would love to be in a band like that. That's what I'm obsessed with is being in like a jam band, blues band, psychedelic stuff. I've always been a huge, fan of like the, like not really jam music, even though I know I said I'm a Dave fan. That's really the only thing I like, but really big fan of stuff like the Mars Volta and like, just like really weird psychedelic stuff. Like has always been a huge draw to me. So Paul Butterfield is like, just like, fucking custom designed for my needs.
Well, that's awesome. Yeah, I'm just reading on East West here. It's according, apparently, the root from which the acid rock tradition emerged. So there you go. Yeah, that sounds awesome. Like it's so interesting with those bands. Like it's a whole different tradition, I feel like, than a lot of, like, so I probably mention it every single episode, and this is getting boring by now, but like I like study jazz as like, in my undergrad. So I did all that and then, tried that as a career, and that didn't work, but,
right.
So I did all that. And that's like, obviously like jamming is kind of just like your pastime activity, like doing however long you can or whatever, like ripping solos if you want, or neat little things if you're learning. But it's just like a total, I feel like it's a different thing for like those jam bands. Like I remember watching my dad is a huge Tedeschi Trucks fan.
Okay.
Like that kind of like Tedeschi and Dave, like Derek Trucks and all that kind of band. And so I remember watching like, I think one of their live videos, it was like a different kind of, I don't know, it's a different like way and approach to it. Like it's not so much like straight ahead, like solo, solo, here's the melody again, here's the melody again, blah, 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 like structure. I do feel like it's more of like a vibe thing than anything else. Like it's so, it's just so interesting. Just like coming from, I don't even know the roots or anything. And that'd be so interesting to go into, but.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, in general, that was one thing that always, I really, really did not get into blues music, when I was like, you know, formative, I guess, because I was really, really like, it's albums, like album oriented rock music is like the greatest art, or jazz, you know, jazz albums, but always albums, always commercial product. And I kind of got into folk music, and that's when I learned that you're not like listening to a specific recording. Like that's not what you're trying to listen to. Like you're trying to like hear what they're talking about, like where they come from, like what kind of little things they do. Like it's not about like they all play the same song, it's about the little bit of variation, and most of it is like comes out of a live performance tradition, especially like, you know, these blues guys, like they weren't really like cutting records, and if they did, they were just trying to cut a single so they could get like a little, get out of the fucking studio and back into the club where they actually made money. They didn't make any fucking money on the records. And so That was a big leap for me to take, because like I was a big like fucking, I was basically, you know, Anthony Fantano, like in the way that I engaged with music. And I realized like about a year or two ago that that's just like such a fucking garbage way to like to interact with music, because it's just basically like being like, oh, like dudes, it's like I'm only engaging with like one tiny part, and it's like this the like McDonald's product, even if it's like very challenging to listen to, it's still just like, oh, it's like this packaged product to make someone money, and usually not the artist, you know. And and some people obviously do great stuff with albums, I'm not saying I don't listen to albums, but you know, it's just like I had to get over that to engage with this music and really hear what was going on.
Yeah. And it's also like the context behind the work too, like on it definitely took me a while to understand, like it's definitely a project of it, and it's like a little short package of time. Like it's almost like going to an art gallery and then like running through it or something, or like spending like less than 30 seconds looking at a painting and then okay, move on kind of thing. Like not getting the context of the artist, or not getting like where they were, or where like you could look back in the progression. And it is useful, like more historical, like get these recordings and see where they were, and like see their progression, if they're evolving as like a band or anything, or if it's a solo artist, kind of seeing where they evolve and where they took their art. But yeah, just getting that it's like definitely more of a project. And I do feel like that's more associated with the jazz tradition and the folk tradition, where it's more a collaborative thing, and you don't get set bands, and then like it's very like these bands just produce this line of things and then the end.
Yeah.
Where it's more like kind of overlapping, this artist worked with this artist, then like you get these career arcs that are like they might have formed a quartet that produced three albums together, but then they go on to do their own stuff, and it's kind of this big web instead of a very like a bunch of straight lines with more, I feel like,
I think a lot of people like really, there's like this great impulse that's like kind of like comes in a lot of people's bad understandings of history in general, that there's this linear progression, and like this guy influenced that guy, and then like it all was to create the final work of music. Basically, it's like a great, you know, it's like it's a progress narrative, and that's not how history works. If you're a Marxist, which is the right way to analyze history, I mean, you can get into variations of that, but it's a series of people interacting like in their material conditions. And, you know, a lot of people, I think, like to promote this great man of history in music a lot. And I had to unlearn it. Like, you know, I definitely believe that shit. And then, as soon as I unlearned it, I was so much more free to like engage with so much different stuff. in just such a freer way, in a way that made me feel like I was actually like letting myself go and like, you know, letting kind of participating in something more, you know. I can't recommend enough like trying to get into music in that way and re-engage with local music and stuff like that. Yeah. If that, you know, I highly recommend people kind of invigorating that thing. And I believe folk music, I have like a overarching theory of folk music that like everything good is basically folk music. Where it's like, you know, I mean SoundCloud rappers are folk musicians, like DIY punks are folk musicians. Like, it's not about like knowing who the greatest band in the world is. It's just about like participating in music with other people, and like, who really cares? Like, I mean, it's as best as, it's good as you guys were doing, you know? I mean, I think there is maybe a little bit of subjectivity where you could say some people are better, but like, you know, I think at the end of the day, it's about like, it's about seeing these people, these musicians playing with each other, doing interesting things, and just kind of like disconnecting yourself from this like linear narrative of like where it's supposed to be going, and just fucking, you know, just get into it. Just vibe, man.
Yeah, it's like it's all just participation, really, like you're saying. Mm-hmm. Like, it's all getting involved kind of, and like you're saying, and just doing it, and the nothing, like no end goal, no real, like you can have aspirations and like, and obviously like you want to be somewhere or want to do something, but it's like, it's not, doesn't have to be very on like a grandiose level or anything. Like, it's mm-hmm. very on a minor level of just being able to participate within the community and everything, and get that kind of sorted. What is, like, I kind of ask everyone this, but what is your general like listening like routine or anything? Like, do you always have it on, kind of thing? Or
yeah, I mean, I definitely always have it on because I have ADHD, so like I listen to music a lot when I work, which, you know, I've had to try to kind of relearn. So when I was growing up, the way I really like digested albums was I used to drive around a lot. I used to drive pizzas, I used to just drive and smoke weed. I always loved being in a car. So I have kind of gotten back into that because I bought a Miata this year. And so I like just kind of take it out and drive, and I'll listen to music while I'm driving a Miata again. And it's kind of a way for me to like really just focus on just the music. I mean, obviously my driving too, I'm very safe with the driving. So that's always been like kind of my favorite way to listen to music is on drives and driving by myself. Driving by myself at like 11 o'clock, maybe a little bit later, like 11:30. I've had like a cup of coffee and I took some Kratom right before I started driving. And like, you know, I'm just kind of like, I finally got out. It's a nice day. The music is just like hitting, like it's got, you know, it's just feeling good. Like I'm pumped up. And then, you know, I come back home after I listen to that. So like, that's probably my favorite way. But yeah, I mean, I listen to it all fucking day. Like I listen to it, you know, when I'm working. I've listened to music when I read. Like, I mean, I just like have to have the sound going.
Yeah. I get that. It's I'm back in my day job office and I can't listen to anything. It's killing me. Just like not being able to like concentrate at all.
When I used to be a chef, a line cook before I came into my current career, which is software engineering. And obviously it's much easier to listen to music while I'm software engineering at home. But yeah, when I worked in the kitchen, if a place wouldn't let you listen to music, it was like, I'm fucking out of here. Like, it was always a punishment and stuff like that the chef would throw on you. And I worked in this one kitchen where like, I just hated the chef. And that was one huge reason, was because she wouldn't let us listen to music. But yeah, and that's, it even changes. Like, I was listening to like a shitload of trance music when I was cooking and shit like that. Yeah. I listened to way more rap, you know, and that's always been like a really cherished time. Like, when I think about working when I was cooking, like, it's always just like, man, it was always great, like, listening to music, sharing music with people that I cooked with. Mm-hmm. It was always a great spot for me. Yeah,
that's awesome. Is that how you is that how you heard of Tenacious D, or is that another way?
No, that I heard of because I went to middle school in like the 2000s.
We might as well announce it, but like, so Adam, what album are you talking about right now?
The self-titled Tenacious D album, the first one, because, you know, like, there's the TV show and shit, and then so like you could people had downloaded a lot of those songs on like Napster or whatever, you know, the early Bear Share, I think it's Kazaa, that shit. Oh, man. But yeah, the first one that came out in like, I think it's 2003 would be my guess. Cause I probably really got into it maybe eighth grade, but probably freshman year of high school is probably when I really got into it. But yeah, no, go ahead.
I was just going to say, was that like your, like a perfect time, kind of looking back at it, like getting into that kind of stuff?
Oh yeah. I mean, so I actually went and saw Kyle Gass, who's half of Tenacious D, if you don't know. It's Jack Black and Kyle Gass. And I saw Kyle Gass like play like a solo set before they were playing like Lollapalooza or something. And he was playing this club when I was living in Champaign, Illinois. And I went up to him after, like when he was like leaving the stage, and I was like, Kyle, I was like, thank you for making like the first CD that I ever hid from my parents. And he was like, dude, that's like a really meaningful thing to hear from someone. Yeah, it was like so perfect. Like, cause it's like, I thought of it because I put it on, my wife and I like to listen to like Tenacious D and like Lonely Island and stuff when we're driving on long trips. Cause it's just like fun to sing those songs. I mean, it's like the music is like really good in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. Like they just have a lot of fun. It's really not like super, super dirty. Like, I mean, they're always talking about jizz is about like the worst. Like, and I mean, I guess there's like everyone knows the Fucker Gently song, which I feel like isn't really super representative of like their playing. Like, mm-hmm. I think that song is kind of like definitely one of my lesser favorite. I mean, at the time in middle school, it was obviously like one of my favorites, but yeah, like the skits are really funny on it. Like, I know every word to all those skits, and it was definitely very formative for someone like trying to discover music, like, because they're like classic rock guys, but like not like, I don't know, like in a different way. It's so funny. Like, I've heard someone describe Tenacious D as Tenacious D, like they're trying to convey to you this sound of the song in their head. Like, in like, they're really good at like getting you to hear it with like just the little stuff that they do.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I don't know. Like, they were just like, they were like the first rock music, and yeah, like, I mean, I don't think it's like super dirty. Like, obviously my parents would have fucking flipped their shit if they heard it, like more than like Wonder Boy, which, right. I'm sure I like tried to sneak on like when we were in the car to be like, oh, like I can throw a little D on, like, because it's like that's what I was listening to like the whole time in my Walkman. Yeah. Is just like Tenacious D and System of a Down and shit.
Yeah. Oh my god. That actually reminds you of my parents would only let me listen to Christian hardcore bands, so it was like Under Oath and like As I Lay Dying and shit.
Yeah.
just like oh, don't worry, these guys are Christian, like Norma Jean and shit. But
I also did use the excuse like, oh, I would have to pay like the markup tax at the Christian bookstore, like, because, you know, like you could buy the same CD like anywhere. Yeah. But like if you were like, is it at the Christian bookstore, you could be like, well, it is Christian, like. Yeah. You know, I have no idea. I mean, I, you know, probably honestly my favorite band from like that, like the Tooth and Nail stuff, mm-hmm. is Me Without You, which is probably the most religious ones, but also the ones that probably, if my parents had heard, would have like flipped out the most if they had really listened to it, like, because it's obviously kind of dark and complicated, which is why it's good. But yeah.
Yeah.
No, once I could burn CDs, I just wrote fake names and shit on them. So they didn't have any idea. They didn't have any idea.
Oh man, that's perfect. Back to Tenacious D. Were you like a classic rock guy before, or is this like kind of just a little inclined into that?
So I think Pink Floyd was probably the first band I really got into, like the Roger Waters era Pink Floyd. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I got really into that probably like seventh grade. I think I got like, I started playing electric bass is why, like my parents bought me an electric bass to keep me in orchestra. Cause they really didn't want me. They were like, that's the only activity he's like, actually like would keep him not like, you know, not turning into the guy that I had turned into. But I was really into Pink Floyd. And I think that kind of like, I had a buddy, who was really, really into like, metal and hard rock stuff. Cause like, I grew up in like cornfield in Illinois. So like, the butt rock era was like in full force. So I probably they played things like Led Zeppelin and mm-hmm. Pink Floyd on that station sometimes, but it was also like mixed in with like System of a Down and Limp Bizkit and like Shine Down and like all that shit. So like, I think it was like a buddy. Yeah. That like, I kind of been like I was kind of afraid of the harder stuff. So like Tenacious D was definitely more accessible to me because I was like, definitely kind of afraid of like the Power Man 5000s and shit like that. Like it was still a little too hard for me in like seventh, eighth grade.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love dirty jokes. Yeah. That was, yeah. Anyways.
It's definitely like a gateway like band for a lot of, I feel like it was at that time that like, cause it came out in 2001. So it feels like it's a very good time for like classic rock revisionism or something like just very, like look back and see these bands in the 60s, 70s, 80s that kind of inspired them. And I guess for that time period, it's kind of right.
Yeah. Well, you know, what's really weird is we're bringing this up that they're like classic rock guys. And other than like, if we exclude School of Rock existing, which isn't, it's not canonical D.
Right.
But they really like, it's weird. Like they have that song about Dio. And yeah,
true.
Like that, I didn't have any fucking idea who Dio was when I heard that song. Like they were the one, and like Dio is like a guy too that it's just like he's like not like if they were like real doofy classic rock guys, like they would have picked some stupid guy like Jimmy Page or something. Something like Dio, like they kind of turned him into a meme. Like I think he like sort of saw his career resurrected like because of the D. So. I don't know. I'm totally making that up, but yeah, it's weird that they're like, kind of like they're speaking to this, but like, they feel like they're like the natural continuation of like the cock rock, like big classic rock shit than what like was actually like claiming to have inherited that at the time, which was like, you know, Buck Cherry and like that guard or Jet, like that crap, the worst music like ever made. And so, yeah, so like, I don't know, it definitely felt like more like that's why I think it still holds up to me so well is because it's just like the songs are really fucking funny and like the music is great on mm-hmm. them. Like, I love them. Like, they're so goofy.
Yeah. Like, and I think like that first single was Tribute off of that album. And I feel like it's just such a good like idea first, like just a context and idea of a song where like they're talk about like to play the greatest song in the world. And then this is like a tribute to that song.
Cause I can't remember it.
Yeah. Cause they can't remember it. And then like just the actual song itself is just like a very, very like fucking good song. Just like the chorus, everything is so singable.
It's like, so good. Yeah. It was like, it had the video, which was really funny. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that was the other thing is so after the album got out, because I did not have cable when I was a kid. Especially HBO. We certainly did not have HBO. And I didn't realize that there was like a whole TV show before that album. And like some of the songs are off of the TV show. They're kind of reworked a bit. And Tribute is one of them. But then I got into the show. And then you kind of get into like Mr. Show and shit like that, because they kind of like are a continuation of that. And so I just like discovered like all this like really cool like 90s era stuff, because like that's ultimately what they are. They're definitely like Gen X slacker guys. It's like ultimately who they are. Yeah. and like the tradition they're kind of like musicking with. But they're also like improv guys. So like that's where it's yeah, they're just like really interesting band. Like it's just so weird. And I even really like the later stuff. Like I'm probably like one of the only people who's still just like, yeah, this stuff fucking rules. Like still, I still love a lot of them. So
yeah,
I love the movie. I love the movie.
I do remember seeing the movie and I was like, holy shit. Like, I think I was a little young. I think I forget when that movie came out, but yeah, that rocked my world. But yeah, it's, I think the thing with Tenacious D that I kind of like looking more into them since you told me about this album, like they seem much more like aware of like their, and maybe that's just like a very being kind of comedic and just like have to look at the big picture of things and more aware of like who they mm-hmm. are and what this like what this music is that they're playing.
Yeah.
But it just have a sense of like, yeah, we're kind of these goofy like shit dudes, like
yeah,
like you're saying Gen X Lockers, like they just are very aware of themselves and know how to put that in like an album. Like
yeah like yeah. Like I remember when I was a kid, you know, listening to this, like, you know, Jack Black and KG, they're obviously like chubby. Cage is bald and like dresses like your dad. Like he is always like, he's just like terribly dressed. And obviously we all know who Jack Black is, but this was before like Jack Black was Jack Black. And like, but so they'd be like singing about like, you know, pulling all these women and like, but like putting enough in to know that they were kind of lying, but like they also did, like, you know what I mean? Like they still would like not, it wasn't like they weren't fucking, like they definitely were doing pretty well because they were just goofy. And like you're saying, they were like, so they knew exactly who they were mm-hmm. and like built it into this huge thing of like, oh, like big, that we're bigger than life, but at the same time, like still speaking to like our flaws. Like it's just so, it's so like, it's just like a perfect tightrope of like how they do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just, it just makes perfect sense. Do you remember like the very first listen of the album that you had?
Maybe I would have, I mean, I probably heard, I know I downloaded Tribute off of like Kazaa, and I actually downloaded the show version and I didn't mm-hmm. know that, but I think I had seen the video on like MTV2 or something, and like I said, my buddy, I don't remember him having it out. I don't really remember how I came into possession of the album. I know I had a burned copy. Oh, I do kind of. Okay, so this guy burnt it for me, I think, and then I don't remember exactly the context I was listening to it in, but it was probably on like that silver Walkman Discman that everybody had. And it was probably like, yeah, I mean, it would be like you would listen to it and then like go to lunch and like we'd all be like telling the lines from the songs that we all thought were funny and shit, and like, you know, someone figured out how to play like Fucker Gently on the guitar, so everybody would like be singing it like after yeah. school and shit. So it was like a very musicked album for me, which is like really funny. Like it was like so popular with like everybody I was friends with at school that like we would like actually music with it as opposed to just like passively listen to the album. Like it was, yeah, it was funny. Yeah, it was so pivotal to my childhood. Like I cannot overstate like how much I listened to it as a kid and how I just like hung on it, and it was like the source of like every joke that me and my friends told.
It's I feel like you were probably like at the time the perfect demographic for them. They're just like targeting the shit out of like these middle school kids that will then like non-stop like, talking about it.
Yeah, it was like Jerky Boys or whatever. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like it was like, it was definitely the natural progression because I was really into like Weird Al like when mm-hmm. I was younger than that, and it was definitely like the dirtier kind of Weird Al stuff, because like Weird Al is the same where like a lot of his songs like are like, I still listen to Dare to Be Stupid a lot because like that song is just like really funny and cool, like the music is great on it. So it was, I think that's probably where they kind of landed for me, was like they were like grown up newer Weird Al for me. Like it was like, oh, like I'm a man now, like I talk about sex, I make sex jokes and shit. Yeah. Like so like Weird Al doesn't talk, but that's, he's for kids. Yeah.
Well, so, talking about fat people and shit. And,
yeah. Like, they're talking about doing cock push-ups and shit. Like, dude, that cock push-ups line was so, we'd always just be like, cock push-ups? Cock push-ups? Like, oh man. My God. Yeah. This is so good.
Do you have, like, a favorite track off the album? Or is it just, like, a general thing?
My favorite song off of the first album is probably... what's it called on it's the double team one, because I know that they have two versions of it. There's also like a show one, I can't, and I know they changed the name. I think it's called Double Teams.
Double Team, yeah.
Yeah, and it's the one where they talk about having a two-man menage a trois,
right?
And it's got like this funk riff in it, and like it's just like such a huge sound. Like, the song is just epic and the lines are so funny in it. And they're just, yeah, they're like describing like how, like, they're like best friends that like together, like, just like satisfy this woman who's appeared out of nowhere. Like, cause like, he's just like, he claims to be reading a book at the beginning of the song, and like a sexy woman walks in, right. And, like, and then Cage is coming out of a trap door to like supremely satisfy a woman in a way that she has never been satisfied, because they're like just two dudes. And like, that was legitimately shocking in a lot of ways, because I mean, when I was growing up, like we were talking about earlier, like it was extremely homophobic in that time. And like, not to say, I'm sure, you know, kids today are still pretty homophobic, but like, it was like dudes talking about having sex like with each other, basically. Like, that was a bold move, like, for them in a lot of ways. Like, I mean, I definitely didn't see, you know, people on TV, like, you know, like, I, you know, you would hear people talk about menage a trois, but it was always two, you know, about two women, and like, so it was like, it was definitely, you know, and that kind of stuff became more popular, I think, as, and it was definitely formative. Like, Jackass and shit for me was very formative, to be like, look, you don't have to be like a certain kind of gay guy. You don't have to be a certain kind of straight guy. Like, you can be whatever. And like, did they go over the top? Yeah, they were making TV and music and shit. But yeah, I mean, that's the thing always with the Tenacious D music, is the sex stuff is never feels really that misogynistic. It does feel a little bit maybe, but it's generally poking fun at themselves, right? Like, to be like, or just like this kind of like teenage boy impulse to like view women in the way that they are. Like, it's never glorifying it, really. It's always kind of like being like, this is just like, I don't know, it's like kind of making fun of like the, yeah, the whole kind of cock rock thing of and kind of turning it on its head. And there's never songs that I put on and like I'm listening to my wife and I'm like, oh god, I can't believe like I didn't remember this. which does happen, you know. I try to just, you know, be like, all right, well, if we're not gonna listen to that anymore, yeah, chalk up another misogynistic thing that was just getting fucking piped straight into my brain, like, right, at the time, or homophobic thing.
Yeah Well, like, yeah, like you were saying, like making fun of themselves, I feel like the whole like the skit before Fuck Her Gently and the whole song Fuck Her Gently is like making it like, you know, when like you think you're doing really good or something.
Yeah.
It's very more of like a guy is just like very talking about like sex and just like, you know, when you're like inside, you're like, you're thinking that you're doing so well and then it's actually like really dumb. And like, yeah, it's just a very, it's not like they talk about sex in like you're saying, like non-misogynist way of like, of any way, just like how dumb they feel sometimes, of like how stupid they feel about it.
Yeah. It is shocking when I like look back and I'm like, somehow I did find like some positive like sexual information like in this awful time of like, I mean, this is like the fucking Bush era,
right?
My sex ed is like literally done in a public school by the Catholic Church. Like, I mean, we did not have like really you know, I guess we did. We had some stuff, but yeah, I mean, this was certainly by far the best kind of sexual like information you were getting from the popular media, but in a lot of ways. And yeah, I mean, it's been a lot, like I said, there's a lot of unlearning, a lot of the media I consumed like from that era. And thankfully, Tenacious D, they did not really, you know, need any unlearning.
Yeah. You don't have to stop listening to them.
No.
Awesome. So moving on to the final little segment of the show, I usually wrap it up with the guests giving one little recommendation, maybe a book, movie, article that they read, something that they're checking out, just anything for them, for the audience to listen or absorb after they listen to this album. Do you have something for
after today's well, I mean, I really do recommend watching the shows. Mm-hmm. You can find them. I don't know where they're at. I'm sure savvy people can find them. I bet you much of it is on YouTube because nobody gives a shit about it. True. I bet you it might be on like the HBO streaming services, because they did own it. But there was a DVD that came out after this album that consolidated like all of the media that they had put out, and it's called Tenacious D, the Complete Masterworks, and like they're like dressed like Bach on the front and shit. Like, loved it. But the TV show is really funny, especially if you like Mr. Show. Mm-hmm. It's got like David Cross, like they came up with like Groundlings, so it's like a lot of those guys. Like later in the movie that comes out, like Tim Robbins is in the movie. And so I really liked like the peripheral Tenacious D media, the TV show. I like the movie. I don't recommend watching a movie if you're not familiar with the TV show, so watch the TV show first. But the TV show like kind of gives a lot of context to these songs. They're different arrangements because they're literally just the two of them on those stuff. But it's funny. It's a weird, goofy show. Like it's kind of like a sketch show and it's kind of like a sitcom. It's got like a consistent plot through it. I think it's like six episodes. It's really good. I honestly at this point, I would probably say the show is the thing that like I would recommend to someone. But I mean, the album is, I don't know. I like them. I love them both. Like I love them both like separately for different things. Yeah. So definitely check out the show. It's if you haven't seen it, it's great. It's a lot of fun. Yeah.
I'm actually just reading here. There's a skit on the album written by Bob Odenkirk. So that kind of works with your,
They're like all, David Cross is on the show. Mm. If I remember, I know he's in the movie for sure. But yeah, like all those guys kind of were doing stuff because Jack Black is on Mr. They're actually both of them are on Mr. Show. Now that I remember. They appear in Mr. Show. So they kind of like some Jack Black has had a TV show too, with all them where like he like lives in a motorcycle or something. I've never seen it. So if you find that, I've heard it's pretty bad, but it was kind of like a proto Adult Swim, because I really was into like Adult Swim at this point too. Mm-hmm. You know, like I was getting into that. Like I think that was about to come out. So the show, I love it. Definitely check it out. Very funny.
That's perfect. Do you have anything of yourself to plug or before we wrap up the show or anything?
I don't really. For the first time in a long time, I don't. You can follow me on Twitter. Crappiest Oats now. CrappiEst Oats, like oatmeal. So yeah, I'm pretty much just doing that. I'm still trying to think of something. I had to take so much time. I've been like doing the podcasting and a TV show for like, I don't know, 4 years. And I was just kind of like ready to give it a break and do some other stuff. I've been playing a lot of music. Mm-hmm. If you're in Durham, North Carolina, I am playing a blues festival, hopefully still. With the COVID stuff, they're canceling some of the acts. But since I'm local, they're like gonna maybe still have the local bands play. That is in September, I think September 11th. So if you're in Durham, North Carolina, come to the Blue Note Grill. There's big beer and blues fest. Great, tremendous musicians. But yeah, other than that, just play some music, learn to play some music, learn to play some sports. You know, or just engage with it like a little more personally in some way. Go. I mean, we all need listeners to music. People have to be around the music too. You don't have to just play music.
Yeah, that's perfect. That sounds like a good time. Anyways, thanks, Adam, for coming on the show. You could follow it at big_shiny_goons. You could follow me at No Salary Retained. Like, subscribe, all those things. Hit those buttons. You know how it is. And once again, thank you so much, Adam, for coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man. It was great to kind of do a show again for once. I feel a little rusty, but I think it went okay. I hope you guys like it.
No, it'll be good. Awesome.